For many of us, the natural beauty of Wisconsin, I think, is one of the best things about living here. And there are so many wonderful native species to enjoy. But it doesn't take much to throw those delicate ecosystems out of balance when invasive species arrive and start taking over. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest today, Kelly Kearns, is the invasive plant coordinator with the Endangered Resources Program at our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Kelly, thanks so much for coming by. Always a great pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
We have a lot to talk about when we talk about Wisconsin's invasives. When we refer to a plant or animal as invasive, what do we really mean?
Well, there's a legal definition that's the same at the federal level as it is at the state level, that it refers only to non-native species, so species that aren't native to that particular region, in our case to Wisconsin, and that cause ecological damage or harm to human health or even economic damage. And so, for example, an agricultural weed could also be considered an invasive plant, but usually they're referred to as weeds because that's kind of long-term, it has been. But something that gets into a forest, and you know, like buckthorn or garlic mustard, yeah, and actually impacts the ecology of that forest and prevents other trees from growing, those yeah, things would be called invasive species.
And how did most of them get here? Just by accident?
It's a real mix. Most of the invertebrates and those mostly came accidentally, coming in with soil or with plant products or something. A lot of the plants came in accidentally as well. Especially some of the agricultural weeds were probably introduced accidentally. But a lot of the ones that are coming in more recently are actually ornamentals. They were brought in for planting, for landscaping, or for forage for cattle or erosion control, things like that.
And just got out of hand.
Yeah.
You focus on quite a few in your work, do you not?
Yeah, I work mostly with the ones that grow in the upland areas. And then we have other folks that work on the ones that are in the aquatic areas in lakes and streams. But we all work together on those.
And are they, and they're pretty much all over the state. I mean, our most common invasive, first maybe we should say you mentioned buckthorn, that's a common invasive. What are some of the other common ones?
Well, I would say the most common invasive plant is reed canary grass.
Yeah.
It's found, we've done some studies using imagery that has identified that a very large percentage of our wetlands are actually dominated by reed canary grass. And then there's a large number of others that are, their reed canary is a part of them. And so reed canary was planted for forage for many, many years, and it's been planted into those wetlands. You know, farmers were thinking that they were doing a great thing, you know, mm-hmm, planting into this kind of wet wasteland that the wetlands mm-hmm were, thinking that there wasn't a lot of other value there. And we've since found out that there's other good reasons to maintain wetlands in their native state. And reed canary is a very aggressive plant and spreads into those. It's an odd one because there is a native reed canary, and so it's a little unclear what's actually spreading.
Oh, well, are there some new invasives coming into the state? I mean, probably all the time there's something.
Well, we have a couple of new invertebrates, and I think Judith is going to talk about one later
yeah,
at the end of the show. Some of the plants, we haven't had any new invasive plants that showed up just last year, but we have a number of new ones that have been that we found in the last few years, and a couple of them that we've had pretty good success in containing. One, for example, is impatience. It's a kind of a extra large cousin of the jewel weed or forget me or touch me not that
yeah,
a lot of people are familiar with. This one is really invasive in Europe, and it's also been invasive in other states here. And we found it in up in Shawano County. A forester found it when they were visiting a landowner's site, and with a little bit of work and a little bit of a grant, then that site has been completely eradicated as far as we know. So there's
excellent.
Yeah, it's uncommon we're able to actually get that good kind of control. But in this case, the plant is an annual, so it doesn't have long-term seed bank. So there's others like Japanese hops that is spreading in the streams in southwest Wisconsin, and unfortunately, it's spreading a lot faster than we can actually start working on it. And flooding spreads it both downstream and upstream when you have a lot of standing water in the backwaters. And so we're finding that it's getting into a lot of our streams in the southwest part of the state and basically just covering the banks and killing everything else on the banks.
Kelly Kearns, our guest, as we talk with her about invasives today in Wisconsin, call us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Rebecca in Menominee Falls has a question for you. Rebecca, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have some invasive grass that has taken over a raspberry patch. We actually had to dig out a 50-year-old raspberry patch because of this. And it looks like big blades of grass, and then it gets a plume on top. And I pulled it all out last year and sprayed it, but of course it's coming back. And I'm wondering if I spray it with Roundup again and cover it with like black, thick plastic garbage bags weighed down, will that kill it eventually?
It depends on what the plant is and how big your population is and what's nearby. So It sounds like you might have Phragmites, which is a really common invasive plant along the Lake Michigan area. And, you know, pretty much the whole Lake Michigan watershed has a lot of problems with Phragmites. And so that plant spreads by underground roots and by long rhizomes that it sends out and starts new populations, as well as by seed. And so if you can go in and mow down, spray, and cover the entire population, and you're sure that none of it is outside of your black plastic area, you potentially can kill it off if you leave that plastic on for at least a year. But it's a very persistent plant with very strong root systems, so it may take a little while.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim in Hancock. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a question. I have watched Hancock's a small rural community with a couple of lakes, and I have watched garlic mustard progress from the northeastern part of the community and spread toward the northwestern part of the community. Our village has ordinances against invasive species, but the garlic mustard is frankly spreading mostly along right-of-ways and village property.
What do you think, Kelly?
Well, if garlic mustard is in your noxious weed ordinance, then whoever's responsible for enforcing that should be, you know, talking to whoever's responsible for the rights of way and, you know, the areas that it's spreading in and letting them know what they can do to control it. Most municipalities do not have garlic mustard on their noxious weed list just because it's already so abundant that it's really hard to require everybody to contain it. In the far southeast part of the state, it would be really hard to require everyone to contain it. Up in your area, it probably is not nearly as abundant yet.
So talk to the county officials then? Or?
Yeah, somebody in the municipality, or probably not the county, but somebody in the municipality probably has weed commissioner as part of their job. I would say talk to whoever the village chair is and see who that person might be.
And, you know, there was somebody who was considering running for weed commissioner.
Thank you for not saying one of your favorite noxious weeds. I was afraid that was going to be the transition there.
Judith Zierz-Poisson joins us right now. Larry Mueller here with her. Your gift makes a huge difference in our fall membership drive. It makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. So I hope you'll step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And I promise every dollar pledged will not go into my campaign chest, my war chest. It will go right to Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, Larry, last hour we heard from 16 new and returning members. Thank you so much for those pledges. And guess what? One of our favorite things, Larry, right now we have a dollar for dollar match. Are you ready for this? Up to $5,000. $1,000. That's a big one. And this generous match is from the Sharon from Fremont and a pair of supporters from Eau Claire. And what it means is that they'll match every dollar you give. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So get your pledge doubled right now. It's a great opportunity. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you might think about some of the regular guests on the program who you really enjoy. I think Sandy Sawchuk is a great guest who helps us with our pets. Scott Craven, he's always happy to speculate on your wildlife sightings. The weather guys were just on, Steve Eckerman and John Martin, and our bird guy, Bill Volkert, all
right.
Great guests.
Bill will be on Memorial Day, as always. Scott will be on next Wednesday. We bring them to you as often as we can, always with great information. They cover topics near and dear to your heart, topics like invasive species, Kelly telling us about them today and what we can do to help contain them. They give you advice. They give you ideas. And because you've come to trust and appreciate these guests, support this program with your dollars. It's easy. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it only takes a few minutes of your time. You just tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. And you can give in one lump sum, or better yet, you can become a monthly sustainer. No matter how you choose to give or how much you give, use the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
Basically, I just believe with public radio, it's almost a duty to become a member because the programming is why you listen. All you have to do is travel someplace that doesn't have public radio for a week or so and realize how much you miss it. And you want to come back? I've been known to turn it on my computer when we're traveling and there's not a decent public radio station anywhere near us. I just really enjoy it. I enjoy the programming. I learn things. That makes a big difference to me. And I get a little bit of everything. One of the nicest things about WPR is that it is statewide. We try to hit a different state park every week during the spring and summer. And so we're traveling around the state. It's just wonderful to be able to continue listening pretty much wherever we go in the state. That's something that is very rare. That has been just sort of icing for us, is to know that we can continue listening wherever we go in Wisconsin. I'm Michelle from Madison, Wisconsin. I hope you'll join me in being a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during our spring membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your support of WPR. Your gift, maybe it's $10 or $15. I see somebody just contributed $120, so that's $10 a month. That's great. Or maybe it's $50 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And if you've never given before, here's what to expect. It's really a short process. It takes just a few minutes. You answer some basic questions, your name and address, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay for it. No trick questions there.
Not at all. And that's all there is, really. You make that first donation to WPR, you'll feel good about it. And many first-time donors, they give $5 or $10 a month, but that amount really up to you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
WPR has been around for a long time because we're committed to quality, and that quality is possible thanks to you. Listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget.
Your contribution makes this program possible, and really so many of the other programs as well. You're part of the quality you hear every day on WPR when you donate at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And what a great time to make a contribution, because we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now only until noon from Sharon from Fremont and a pair of supporters from Eau Claire. So your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. So take advantage of this match right now and double your support for WPR programs and for The Larry Mueller Show when you give right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
What does making a pledge really mean? It's a promise. We pledge to bring you great shows every day. You pledge to support them with a contribution and any amount.
And when you help pay for the costs of the station, we'll make sure there's something interesting for you to listen to each and every day. That's our pledge. Now, make yours. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, we have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. So give now. Give $120, it turns into $240 at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR goes twice as far.
And we have this great artist mug for this pledge drive only. It's this year's 2014 artist mug with a pledge of $150 or more that comes out to $12.50 a month. It's a limited edition mug. It's really adorable. I'll put a picture of that up on the Facebook page. It's all different kinds of animals. Of course, a very prominent badger there listening to the radio all over the house, the neighborhood, biking around. It's really a great mug. And you can get it with a pledge of $12.50 a month by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And Kelly's checking it out right now.
And if you're not already a sustainer, you can become one right now, and I hope you'll do it. It's easy to set up convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And I know the artist who
drew that.
Yeah, very well. We worked together for a while, way back when.
It's Renee Graff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
very
she's
nice.
Our hat lady. She wears a cool hat every day of her life. And she's really cool. Very nice person.
Wow. Well, that alone is worth pledging $12.50 a month or $150 in one shot at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.
Really, really appreciate it. And really appreciate having Kelly Kearns with us today. Kelly's the Plant Conservation Program Manager with the Natural Heritage Conservation Program. It used to be called the Endangered Resources Program. And I'm not sure why it got changed, but it is. And it's now the Natural Heritage Conservation Program in our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Talking with her today about those invasives, plants and animals that can get out there in your area and mine as well. If you have questions or comments about those plants or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you have a plant you want identified, an invasive. You have a photo of it. Maybe we can, we might be able to help out with that. Well, if you want to join on our Facebook page, you can do that as well. Certainly call us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@WPR.org, or posting on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I had an email from Bob, Kelly, and said in the April 4th issue of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Rob Driesein wrote an article on controlling buckthorn. And he referred to using a glyphosate from hardware at a big box store as a control. In the April 18th issue, a reader took issue with the article and said, I sprayed with every herbicide at Menards and Fleet Farm, and none of them worked. Would you please comment on the differences in active ingredient concentrations and what we need to know to follow the label to be effective and to be legal, for that matter?
Right. So there's several different herbicides that you can use on woody plants like buckthorn, but it's important to be doing it at the right time of year as well. Doing it in the spring is probably the worst time of the year to kill plants that you're applying for a cut stem application. If you're doing a foliar spray, spring is fine once it's actually leafed out. But for trees and shrubs, you really don't want to be spraying all over and hitting all the leaves, because it's just getting a lot more herbicide out on the ground and on non-target plants than you want to do. So the best way to control those usually is by going in, cutting down the plant in the fall, late summer, fall, or early winter, and then applying a concentrated herbicide to that stump. And there's several different herbicides that are commonly used that you can get at your local big box store. And glyphosate is one, which is commonly referred to as Roundup. And the other one is Garlon, which is the active ingredient is that is triclopyr. And that's also the active ingredient in a lot of the herbicides that are called brush control. herbicides. And so what you want to do is read the label and use the right concentration for the method that you're applying. You never want to use more than the label says, because a lot of people think, well, if I use twice as much, I'll be twice as successful. That's not true. You know, they've done a lot of research to find out what the proper amount is to use. So if you're using a foliar application, the percentage of actually herbicide you're using is going to be much smaller than if you're using a cut stem application. You're going to be having a much more concentrated herbicide application.
All right. There we go. Tom and Nina, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. A question I have is sort of an observation, and then next steps are unknown. In the Appleton area nurseries, there's one nursery I know for sure is carrying Japanese barberry, which is listed as an invasive plant in forest management within the DNR in Wisconsin. And, you know, it's still being sold. In fact, we purchased some several years ago, and this spring I'm going to pull it out of our backyard. But, you know, that's still being sold in the area, even though it's listed as an invasive species. So what steps could be taken to better communicate or address the issue?
What do you think, Kelly?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because it gives me the opportunity to tell you about how we're revising our state invasive species law right now. So about 5 years ago, we had worked for a number of years with a lot of stakeholders and developed a statewide comprehensive invasive species law. It's called NR40. And we, in the first go-round of that law, we wanted to set up the rule and put species on it that are commonly agreed to be invasive. And we're not plants that were used heavily in the nursery industry or other kinds of industries. And so we purposely did not put Japanese barberry on the list at that time, because we knew that it was something that would affect the nursery industry substantially if we would have regulated it at that time. And so now, several years later, the rule went into effect in 2009. We've been implementing it now for a couple of years. And so the last couple of years, we've been working with the nursery industry, others in the green industry, and lots of other stakeholder groups, and reviewing species that people think might be best to be included on the invasive species list. Japanese barberry is one that came up, of course. The problem with barberry is there are many, many cultivars. So these are cultivated varieties, and there's many different types. And some have lots of seeds and reproduce prolifically, and some have very few and don't reproduce as much. So what the agreement with the green industries, and particularly the nursery industry, was that we will regulate those 25 cultivars that through research have been found to be the most prolific, that put out the most seeds and reproduce the most abundantly. And that includes the base, the original parent species. Mm-hmm. And so as we're going through the process of revising this rule, that's one of the species that people will be commenting on. We're going out for public hearings on these in June. And we'll have a public comment period open from the middle of May through the end of June. And we have a number of species that we're adding to the list and a few that we're taking off or moving from the prohibited to the restricted category.
So a chance for you to get some input, and thank you very much for calling. Kelly Kern's our guest today, Plant Conservation Program Manager in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. My guest today, Kelly Kearns, as we talk with her about Wisconsin's invasive plants. And Kathleen in Adams has a question for you. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Okay, my question, I heard that garlic mustard was at one time brought in for food, as food from other countries where they eat it. Is this edible?
Yeah, it is.
Yes, absolutely. And we got an email also saying the same thing and encouraging people to harvest garlic mustard. From now until it starts to flower is really the best time to harvest it, and it's most tender at that time. Once it's starting to flower, then it's a little harder to clean, too. You want to use mostly the leaves and not the stems as much. Certainly, you don't want to throw the roots into your salad.
No.
But garlic mustard can be used as a green, like anything, like you would use spinach, and it can be used as pesto, very good as pesto. And so you certainly can use it. But just be careful if you are harvesting it, make sure that you do it from a place where no one has used any herbicides on it.
So Jeff in Madison said he uses it as in an omelet. Says it helps make a great omelet, and of course the pesto you can freeze.
Right.
Well, I did taste it already. Risked my life, I suppose. It's very good. It's delicious.
Yeah.
Shouldn't people be aware that they can eat this stuff? I mean, it would help the proliferation of it.
I would say a lot of people are aware of that.
Yeah.
Many, many people eat it. I just had some garlic mustard pot stickers yesterday that was made for an event, for an Earth Day event here in Madison.
Oh, very cool. Pot stickers. Oh, well, I'm a big fan of pot stickers.
I am too.
And I'm a big fan of science, and especially citizen science. And our producer, Judith, who's back with us, took part in a citizen science project with the DNR. There's a new invasive mussel in Wisconsin. We haven't really talked much about it yet. It's the New Zealand mud snail. And water samples from around the state were taken and screened. And Judith, you were part of that.
Yeah, it was really great. I was invited to go along with Maria Sadowski, who's been on the show before. She's with the Natural Resources Foundation in Wisconsin. And we went out to the Fish Hatchery Road Service Center for the DNR here in Madison. And Lisi Kitchell, who's been on the show before, talking about mussels, I think, when she was on last. But she was overseeing this project. So the New Zealand mud snail has only been in the U.S. in total since the late 1980s. It was first found in Idaho, and it has spread since then. But the concern for us here in Wisconsin is that there were some water samples that had been taken in 2011 and 12 that were screened last fall, and they were found in water samples from the Black Earth Creek in Western Dane County. Mm. And so far, that's where we know that they are. And these are tiny, tiny snails. And I put photos up on the Facebook page. That's the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And they're tiny, tiny snails. They're about the size of a black grain of rice. So you can imagine how hard it is to even detect them. And the problem is that they will completely cover the bottom of a stream bed, especially trout streams. It's a big problem. They'll completely cover the bottom. And because of that, insects that the trout and other fish rely on can't get down to feed, which means then the trout can feed. So it's a real issue for our fish populations in Wisconsin. So there were water samples from all over the state taken, I think 120 different locations. And each water sample, we didn't do them all in one night, but each water sample was in a tray. And we literally went through each tray with tweezers trying to find if there were any. Happily, we didn't find any. And because they are so small and so easy to miss, each sample had to be looked at by three different people. So it's really labor intensive. So you can see why getting some even non-biologists like myself in there to help. But it was a great experience. And I was so amazed and impressed by how it really was like a different landscape, each tray of water sample, depending on where it came from. You know, different little fish and little shrimp and little plants and different debris. And it was really fascinating to me. I found it really, really interesting.
And Kelly, is this a typical process when a new invasive species is identified?
Well, it depends on what the species is. In this case, it's aquatic, and it's much harder to find things in, you know, inside a stream than it is on an upland site. But yes, when something new is reported like this, then generally we, you know, send out someone to search the area, see if it's, you know, where it might be coming from, where it might be spreading to, try to delineate the size of the population, and then try to determine how to best go about actually controlling that and keeping it from spreading elsewhere. So in the case of Black Earth Creek, you know, they need to now figure out also how do they keep trout fishermen who are in there with their felt-soled waders from spreading this into other streams. And so there's
one of our most popular trout streams in the state.
Yes, unfortunately.
Well, and one of the really interesting things that Lisi Kitchell mentioned was that there's a lot of construction going on along that stretch of highway there. And normally that rubble that's created would be sent all over the state as fill. And if the DNR had not realized that those snails were there, we could have spread it, you know, in a matter of weeks all over the state. So that just shows how important this kind of monitoring is.
Well, it's really interesting and very important. And there are some other important things we need to talk about today as well here on the Ideas Network. And one of them is our spring membership drive. And just to think about that for a minute, as you listen to the show today, your support is the foundation of our budget for this show. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programs. We'll be back to talk to our guest in Kelly Kearns in just a couple of minutes. But first, Judith with me to encourage you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 right now to make your gift of support of the programs you count on.
And we have such an exciting opportunity right now. It's a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now just until noon, so just another 20 minutes or so. That generous match is from Sharon from Fremont and a pair of supporters from Eau Claire. So that means your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 into $200, and so on. And I hate to say it, Larry, but we still have $3,800 to go to make that match. That's in the next 20 minutes, and we hate to leave that on the table. So please take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs right now. Do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might have found yourself hovering around the radio, drawn into a great discussion. You need to get somewhere, but that discussion is really interesting, so you stay with it. And you appreciate the guest's knowledge and also the caller's questions and views. Well, if that's happened to you, and because that's happened to you, you should make a pledge of support right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And maybe you pay your bills online or make purchases online. I'm guessing, like me, you don't miss all the extra paper and envelopes floating around the house, not to mention when you save on postage and checks.
So you can support WPR in that same streamlined way by becoming a sustainer. You choose a monthly amount that works for you. Maybe it's 10 or 20 bucks a month. And you set it up to come out of your credit card or your bank account. It's rolled over every year, so your support will always be current. Easy to do at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
I think all of our hosts and programs on Wisconsin Public Radio are great, but does anyone make you think Wisconsin more than Larry Mueller? I don't think so. Because you have a strong sense of what it means to be a Wisconsinite, chances are that Wisconsin Public Radio and Larry play an important role in that sense of identity. We really do serve the entire state.
And, you know, we've got not only this show.
It's true.
There are a lot of great shows on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we've got news, we've got music, we got sounds from around the state, and sometimes around the world. Over time, all these broadcasts add up to, I think, a really strong sense of connection to the state that we call home.
And Wisconsin Public Radio really is a home that we all share, and it's funded in large part by listeners like you. So please give now. Take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match. That's only in effect till noon, so don't let that slip away. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think a lot of what I hear on public radio, especially about the statewide stuff, sometimes I know the people they're talking about, and I certainly know the places they're talking about. I can really visualize it. The descriptions and the texture really makes it a great experience. So I've had a lot of those kinds of moments, I think, with public radio, because I listen to it so often, you know, pretty much all the time. I'm Ann Katz, Wisconsin Public Radio Association board member from Madison. Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for news, connections, and community.
I hope you'll make your donation in support of the programs you count on right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. And you know what? Whether it's $5 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
And Don't forget, we have a dollar-for-dollar match right now, only to noon, up to $5,000. We had a great comment from Mary from Wallace, Michigan, so not even in Wisconsin, saying, I'm donating this hour because of the challenge. This way, my $120 becomes $240, and when it's matched by my employer, becomes $360. Yeah, she says.
I like that.
Well, join Mary. Thank you so much, Mary, for taking advantage of that challenge. It's a great time to pledge, because for every dollar you give, Sharon from Fremont and a pair of supporters from Eau Claire will donate an additional dollar. It's that simple. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So please help us now. Double the impact of your pledge. Give at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, so I hope you will now make the decision to support WPR financially. It's as simple as that, and pledging is simple, too, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552, and it goes twice as far.
And ask for this year's artist mug with your pledge of $150 or more. That's $12.50 a month. This is a limited edition mug and is only available with a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we just can't emphasize this enough. We have 15 minutes left, and we still have, $3,700 to raise to make sure we take advantage of this very generous pledge. So please, if you're going to pledge, pledge now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Again, that's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network as we talk with our guest for today, Kelly Kearns of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, about our invasive plants here in Wisconsin. I know we had some callers online we lost, so you can join in, get on pretty quickly with your question or your experience that you want to share relating to invasives at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Bill in Waukesha wondered about periwinkle. We did talk about it a little bit earlier, I think. It's taking over anyway in his area, and wonders how to get rid of it.
Okay, so periwinkle, the other name for that is vinca, and it's a ground cover with a evergreen broad leaf and about an inch or so long, and has this beautiful periwinkle colored flowers, so that's why it's called periwinkle. And it often is planted like at the base of a home and then can spread into an adjacent woodland. And so hand pulling is certainly going to be effective for patches that are small enough. You probably will break off some of the roots, and probably some of them will survive, and you'll have to do it again and again. But if you do it for several years in a row, then hand pulling should be fairly effective. If that's not good enough, if you have a really large area, then using an herbicide that kills brush, like the ones we mentioned before, glyphosate and particularly Garlon, can be effective. With something like that where that has a glossy surface, though, leaves have a very glossy surface, you probably need to use some kind of a surfactant in there to break through that glossy kind of waxy surface on the leaf. And so read the label, see what kind of a surfactant can be used with it. Sometimes people just put a little dish soap in there, and that helps break down the surface tension and allows the herbicide to get into the leaves.
Wyatt in Belmont has a question. Hi, Wyatt. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hello, Kelly. I was wondering, I'm a little concerned that, of course, I appreciate, protecting the state from invasive species and publishing the invasive and other lists that recommend people what to plant, what not to plant. But I'm a little concerned that the most detrimental and invasive species into Wisconsin's ecology are still things that you can buy, right, the hardware store, big home improvement stores, or small ag stores, just your invasive cool season grasses. And I'm also a little bit concerned that as we try to eradicate things like multiflora rose and autumn olive, that those things aren't being replaced with native scrub brush species It seems like we're just trying to get rid of the scrub brush altogether, as opposed to replacing it with native plum thickets or sumac, or you know, there's hundreds of other things. Yeah. I was wondering, you know, what you have to say about that, and if there's any plans for either one of those topics.
Okay, and when you're talking about cool season grasses that are for sale at stores, are you talking about turf grasses specifically?
Fescue, brome, you know, thousands of, or hundreds of different kinds of fescue, and the Hungarian brome specifically, pasture grasses, lawn grasses. I would hypothesize that they've been the most detrimental invasive species on the Wisconsin's ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems with developing a rule that people have to follow is that it needs to be feasible to actually take something off the market. It wouldn't be feasible to take Kentucky bluegrass, for example, off the market. It's you know, covers, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres in the Midwest, and it's going to be there. Some people are going to let it go to seed, and it's already all over the landscape, and it's an important plant for lawns. And even though it can get into prairies and other grasslands, it's not something that's feasible to take off the market. The same is true for some of the other cool season pasture grasses as well. They're very important for pastures, and we did discuss some of these species in our species assessment groups when we were assessing different species, and determined that the economic value of those plants is very high, and the ecological harm is sufficiently low that those were species we chose not to put on the list. Or in some cases, like reed canary grass, it's already so widespread that taking it off the market is really not going to prevent the spread of it. And so in those cases, that's how we chose not to make those changes. In regards to your shrub question about removing autumn olive, multiflora rose, and other brush, oftentimes those are actually in grassland areas where we don't want brush, especially multiflora rose. It's a big pest in the southwest pastures in the state, and they do not want brush in there, but multiflora rose is getting in there, so they really just want to eliminate that. In some of our forests where we're trying to get rid of these things, certainly people are replanting shrubs, and through the DNR nurseries, people can purchase native shrubs that they can replant into some of those forests. But they do often want to get rid of the invasives first before replanting.
And where are the nurseries located, the DNR nurseries?
We recently closed one. The biggest one, I think, is the one in Boscobel, and then there's one up north as well.
Okay.
And I'm not real familiar, but there are
you can go online to the website, and that'll pop up for sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wyatt, thank you. I want to give Gary and Ojibwa a chance to join us. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I'm a tree farmer in northwest Wisconsin. I've got a lot of springs and seeps on my property, and I came up with this great idea to plant some watercress. And I just started it this spring, put seeds in peat pots and to do a test and put them in the seeds and stuff. And then I went to a Northwest Chapter WOA meeting in Hayward last weekend and picked up a publication, and I see that watercress was listed as an invasive. I always thought it was a native plant, but I guess it's not, from Eurasia. So I went back out, pulled everything out. But my question is, how invasive is watercress?
Watercress is an interesting plant because it's non-native, and it probably is being spread by birds because it seems to get into springs totally on its own, and it's abundant in springs all around the state.
Hmm.
And I'm surprised that you don't have it already.
Mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't know how much it's impacting the ecology of those springs. No one has done any real studies on it. We certainly know that there are areas where it completely covers the surface of the water, and that no other plants can really grow in there very well. There's actually an aquatic forget-me-not that's also non-native that can do the same thing, but watercress is definitely more widespread. One thing, if you are trying to grow this for food, is that you need to be careful to make sure that you have the water tested, because if there's any contaminants in that water, they can certainly be in the watercress as well. And you wouldn't want to be using that for food if, for example, there's E. coli in the water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Makes...
Well, I pulled them all out. I mean, I pulled all the stuff out. So you know, because I had it in pots and peat pots.
Yeah.
So I don't think the seeds got out, but I suppose it's possible some did. But I was just curious at how invasive it actually was.
Yeah, it's very localized, and you know, it doesn't spread from those. It spreads down the stream a slight bit, but for the most part, it's really in springs and seeps.
Okay. Right. Does it get into flowing water? Because I have a stream then that those seeps obviously drain into.
It can, but it's not as dense in those areas because the flowing water keeps the surface water open mostly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, watercress is great to eat. You know, if you get to, it's wonderful. One of the watercress specialists at the Wisconsin Public Radio is Judith Sears Poisson.
Oh, Larry.
Who's never met a watercress she didn't like, for that matter.
I have to say, my husband heard you say, I'd never met an omelet I didn't like yesterday, and he had to agree. So it's true.
Well, she's here because this is the Wisconsin Public Radio membership drive. Your support is an essential piece of the funding for all the programs you enjoy here on WPR. And this drive is the time for you to take action. Become a WPR contributor with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And Judith, we're moving on this.
We are. This is, it's always a great time to show your support and take action. This is an especially great and important time because just until noon, so just the next 7 minutes or so, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect up to $5,000. We are at a little over $3,400, so $1,500 to go in the next 7 minutes. It's such a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, Sharon from Fremont and a pair of supporters from Eau Claire will donate an additional dollar.
It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. You can double the impact of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, and what a great time to show your support, not just for Wisconsin Public Radio as a whole, but for Larry and the Larry Mueller Show specifically. Larry comes in every day excited to talk about issues and topics that are of interest and important to people living all over Wisconsin. And it is so great when we get calls from every big and little town and city all across the state. And so much of that is because of Larry's enthusiasm and his knowledge and just his love of life that comes through on the air. So this is a great time. Show your support for Larry. Show that you appreciate the topics that he brings to you, the great guests that he has in the studio to talk with you. And also, we have this dollar-for-dollar match only until noon. You don't get a show like this anywhere else. You don't get a host like Larry anywhere else. And this pledge, pledge by pledge, makes this show possible only on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. So really, right now, show your support, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Judith.
Oh, it's all true.
Giving to WPR is easy. I know that's true for sure. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount. Maybe it's 10 bucks a month. And your donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs.
It's really true, every single day.
Show your support at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
I like Wisconsin Public Radio because the programming is excellent. I feel like being a listener and a contributor, that it helps me be a little more in control of what's over the airwaves. Wisconsin Public Radio is important because all of us as a community are contributing and helping to make sure that we get balanced coverage on news and also a very positive listening environment. I find humor, and I love the political discussion that covers both sides of the issues, and I think that's really important. I'm Amy Kocha from Green Bay, and I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can pledge at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson asking for your support of WPR during this spring membership drive. And maybe it's $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
When you became a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took an important first step. Now take the next step and become a financial supporter.
And the step from listener to supporter is pretty easy. You decide how much you want to give. Maybe it's $5 a month. That's a good starting point. And then you go ahead and make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
One of the great things about WPR is you don't have to live in a big city to have access to everything the world has to offer. You get it right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
We hope that you will contribute right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from Sharon from Fremont and a pair of supporters from Eau Claire. And we've got, we got about
$1,200. $1,200 to go. I don't want to say it's do or die, but it's certainly do or cry.
It's do or cry for Larry and Judith right now. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 turns into $200. So I hope you'll take advantage of this match. We've got another $1,200 to go, and you know
before noon.
Before noon, or by noon. So we need to make it in the next minute or two. This is your. If you've been waiting, this is your chance to do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, WPR works on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it, but the whole thing works because you do choose to support it. So how about a pledge right now, maybe $10 a month, and take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match?
You decide the amount. Every day you will be supporting Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Give whatever amount is right for you. Maybe you need some help figuring that out. Well, if you do, think about it this way. Say you hear three things a day that you're really glad you heard. If you paid a dime for each one of those, that would work out to $10 a month. So don't delay. Make that contribution right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. $900 more to go to make that $5,000 grant challenge by noon. So please, right now, show your support.
And ask for this year's artist mug with your pledge of $150 or more. That's $1,250 a month. This is a limited edition mug. Available only available with a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
No time like the present. Just a couple minutes left to make this. We are so close. Please make your gift now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Help us take advantage of every single dollar of that generous challenge pledge.
We're at about $400 or so, $440 to go. Make your contribution right now at WPR.org. Or call 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're taking a look at invasive species today, invasive plants, with our guest Kelly Kern, who is the Plant Conservation Program Manager with the Natural Heritage Conservation Program. It used to be called the Endangered Resources Program, or the new name, the Natural Heritage Conservation Program, and, of course, our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Love to have your inputs and your questions about invasive plants, maybe some that are bothering you. Maybe you've got an experience to share about dealing with one at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We had an email from Sherry in Milton who says, I have a 6-inch onion-type plant that I spray every year with Roundup, and it still keeps multiplying. It has a white bulb the size of my thumbnail and gets a white onion-type flower on it and grows in clumps. Any ideas how to get rid of it? Almost sounds like ramps, but not quite.
I don't think ramps would spread like that.
No,
ramps is,
they wouldn't.
Yeah, they're hard to grow intentionally. I'm guessing it's possibly something like Siberian squill, which has a little blue flower and is actually flowering now. It's one of the first things that flowers in the spring. And it can spread quite a bit in yards and even in forest areas. And it does have a small little white bulb on it as well. And Hand pulling, digging up those little bulblets is one possibility. If it's throughout your yard, then you're going to need to find a way to kill it without killing the grass in your yard. And so typically what people use for something like that, it would be something like 2,4-D that doesn't kill the grass. I'm not sure if that would kill these because they're also they may or may not be killed by something like 2,4-D. So something in a situation where you have a plant that you want to apply herbicide just to that plant and not the things around it, something that's good to use is the wet glove method, mm-hmm. where you put on a rubber glove and then you put a cheap cotton glove on top of that and you spray the herbicide on your glove and then just swipe it on the plant. And that way you can be really directed on how you apply the herbicide.
Judy in Green Bay has a question. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let's see. 2 years ago, we put some new wood chips down in our landscape beds, and this really cool little plant came up that looked like a Christmas tree. And it was about 6 inches tall, and I just left it because I didn't know what it was. And then last year, it came back and is now spread to two of my other beds that are close by. And it's this green tall plant. It looks like a white pine tree, the long needles. Yeah. And I was told that it's horsetail and that it's incredibly hard to get rid of. And so I need some advice.
Okay, well, you gave us a good example as to how invasive plants often get spread. So in mulch and other things like that, seeds or plant parts get in that, and then you spread them on, bring them into your property. So it is good to kind of keep an eye on those things. And when something pops up that you don't necessarily know, it may be a good idea to get rid of it when you still can. So in this case, though, it is possible. This is a horsetail. That's an equisetum. And there's actually multiple species of equisetum in the state, but there is one that fits the description of that you're giving. And they actually spread by rhizomes. And so they have these like underground little rhizomes that spread out and form like a net. And what you really need to do is remove the mulch and pull those things out and try to get the roots out as much as possible. And again, go after every single area where they're in. If you leave some of them, then they'll keep spreading. There aren't really good herbicides to use for horsetails because it's a completely different plant group than most plants. And so there really hasn't been much that's been developed for that. But I would say using black plastic to cover it is another possibility.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not a lot of options there, Judy, but there's a few.
Yeah, I tried to pull it last year, and I just couldn't stay ahead of it. It's so aggressive.
Yeah, I would use something to actually dig, and so that you can make sure you actually get those rhizomes and the roots out.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Judy. Thanks for calling. John in Lake Mills. Hi, thank you for calling. John, are you there? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have a small farm in north of Lake Mills, and I have a problem with garlic mustard, also with buckthorn and multiflora rose and honeysuckle, but I'll keep my question to the garlic mustard. I'm in a partially shaded area, and I have it relatively clear, but the ground cover is essentially garlic mustard currently. Is there some sort of plant that can be a ground cover that can be effectively seeded in with the garlic mustard that will eventually take over? That would be much preferred over the garlic mustard? Or am I fighting a losing battle?
Boy, a lot of people would love to find that magic ground cover. Unfortunately, if it's something that is aggressive enough to beat out garlic mustard, then it's also going to be extremely aggressive, and is something you probably don't want. There are a couple of native species that are pretty competitive against garlic mustard. One is wild ginger, and you're not going to be spreading that by seed. You would have to bring that in by plants. The ants actually spread the seeds on that, and so you wouldn't be able to do it with seed, but using that as a possibility. Another one that is very aggressive is touch-me-not or jewelweed. And again, you're not going to be able to buy seed on that, but you could go to a jewelweed patch and gather the seed and spread those. Jewelweed can be quite aggressive and spread as well, but it is an annual. And so each year that those plants do die back. There are some non-native ground covers that are very aggressive, but most of those you probably wouldn't want to use. You might want to consider using something like the vinca or periwinkle that somebody was trying to get rid of earlier that are woody, because those are ones that could cover it better. But again, really watch out for some of those that are really aggressive.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Christian in Racine has a Chinese trumpet plant in the yard. When they moved in 7 years ago, they trim it down every year, but now learned that trimming makes it grow more. It's taking over the straw bale garden, and Christian needs to deal with it. What can Christian do to decrease its footprint without sending out more running rhizomes?
Okay, like most of the woody vines and same as woody shrubs, the easiest way to get rid of it is to cut it down in the fall and put a concentrated herbicide on that stump. And if there are many stems coming up, then you need to cut every single stem and put that herbicide directly on that stem. You could apply herbicides to the leaves, but again, you don't want to be spraying it all over the place because you'll be hitting non-target plants. And so be careful of how you apply it. You could also try digging it up, but chances are that it's already, the root system is fairly widespread already. And you'd have to dig up things that you don't want to dig up, like your garden.
Right.
So I would say, try to use a very selected herbicide and apply it very selectively to those stumps.
We had a caller earlier who had worries about Phragmites, and we haven't talked much about Phragmites, but it is a miserable plant out there in our landscape.
Right. Phragmites is a plant that's found a lot on our coast, especially, and in wetland areas. And we're starting to see it moving further into the western counties. And we actually have a program right now. We have a grant from the federal government to start going after those populations of Phragmites that are kind of the leading edge going from Lake Michigan to the west. And so if people are aware of those populations of the Phragmites in some of the central and western counties, then we'd like to be made aware of that. So you can contact us on invasive species at wisconsin.gov on our email list and let us know about those populations, and we might be able to help you actually control some of those.
Well, that'd be kind of nice.
Invasive.species at wisconsin.gov.
Okay. I think Judith probably got that up on the Facebook page. If not, we'll get that invasive.species up there as soon as we can. Sylvia in Appleton has a question. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi. I would just like Kelly, if she could comment on the spread of Japanese knotweed and what would be a good way to eradicate it. And I'll take my answer off the phone.
Well, Japanese knotweed is another one of those that's really difficult to eradicate. And when we use the term eradicate, we mean actually completely getting rid of. And unfortunately, that's one that has quite an extensive root system and grows in large clones, and it just keeps growing out from the center. And even a small root fragment can get broken off, goes downstream, gets lodged on a shore somewhere, and can start a whole new population. So knotweed is one that really takes a lot of work, and you have to control, and you have to get every single stem. People have used a repeated cutting. I know people who've had it come up in their lawn and they mow it every year. And, if you mow it repeatedly many, many times for several years, you could eventually get rid of it. Black plastic, there's a population here on Lake Mendota in Wisconsin people have used black plastic on, and they've actually done a really good job of controlling it. But generally, it's using an herbicide either on the resprouts when they first come up in the spring or cutting them back in the late summer, and then apply it to those again in the very, very late summer, early fall is a good time to do that. Then you minimize your herbicide that you have to be using. But again, hit every single stem, and you will not get rid of it in the first year. It will take multiple years.
On Facebook, we got a note from Elizabeth who said that onion-like plant with white flowers sounds to her like garlic chives. And if allowed to go to seed, they are very invasive. She says, don't ask me how I know this. Very waxy leaf seems to repel Roundup.
Okay, well, this comes back to that need for a surfactant in your herbicide. If you have a situation like that where you have a leaf that's repelling your herbicide, you need to put in some kind of surfactant. And usually a little bit of dish soap is something that can be added and works pretty well.
And Bob in Portage County. Hi, Bob.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to make a comment about one of the plants on the list, invasive species, the burning bush. A little background of mine, I've been doing work in contracting work and landscaping about over 40 years and a degree in horticulture, and I think we have to be careful when we're specifying, classifying plants that may become invasive. I've yet to see the Euonymus elatus, which is the burning bush or winged Euonymus, be a problem in any landscape, whether it be out in the where I'm hunting, camping, being with on residential sites. Not a problem at all. Whereas the native, they call it Eastern Wahoo, Euonymus atropurpurea, is definitely a problem because it suckers so bad. I've got it on some sites now.
So your question is, we be careful about the list. And, you know, what's your comment to that, Kelly?
Okay, well, this is very similar to the Japanese barberry that we mentioned earlier in that there are multiple cultivars of burning bush. It's a very popular landscape plant. However, we have been seeing it spreading, and it's much more abundant in the states further south and east of us, and we are seeing it spreading in some areas in Wisconsin as well. And what we've found is, again, there's some research going on as to the cultivars, which ones are the most aggressive. And they found that the actual parent plant and at least one cultivar are super aggressive and produce a lot of seeds that can reproduce. A lot of people have told me that they have one and they see seedlings all over the ground near where they have it. And, of course, birds spread these. They're attractive red fruits. And so this is one that we actually worked with the nursery industry on and came to an agreement that we only are going to be regulating that one cultivar and the parent plant at this time, and all of the other cultivars are going to be allowed to be sold. So this is an example of how we worked really well with the nursery industry to come up with a regulation that's actually reasonable but somewhat protective.
There we go. Bob, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We've got a lot of things. We've covered a lot of things on the show today with Kelly Kearns. Always such a great pleasure to have her invade our studios. And Judith Sears Poisson also invades the studios. One of our positive invaders, just like Kelly.
We are not noxious.
No. And here we are in the spring membership drive. We count on you. For all of our help, or all of your help, as much help as you can give us to keep these discussions on the air. I hope you'll give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we had some success.
Really wonderful success. Last hour, we heard from 54 listeners. And more importantly, even than that, is we made our $5,000 challenge. So thank you so much. We came in at almost $6,000, in fact. So thank you so much. Our goal now is to get 20 pledges in the next 10 minutes. You know, pledges like yours support all of the programs you count on. Thanks so much if you've already given, especially if you helped us make that challenge. We really appreciate it. If not, be the next person to make the programs possible with your gift. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm sure you've been enjoying the conversation with Kelly Kearns of the DNR as we talked invasive plants with her. And I think this is a great example of an interesting and informative conversation, like the type we have in this show.
Exactly. Jabez from River Falls says, intelligent conversation about environmental and social issues is important. Well, if you agree with Jabez, please now take a few minutes to make this program and many more programs possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge. It's that easy. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You connect with Wisconsin Public Radio for information, for engaging content. And entertainment as well. And your gift supports that connection for you and others across the state.
We try to make sure every show includes information, engaging content, and entertainment. Don't you think, Larry?
Absolutely. I hope so.
Yeah, I think so. Leadership gifts of $100 a month and more are important to our continued success. If you'd like to make a leadership gift, you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Please know, though, that your gift of any amount is greatly appreciated.
We all value the beautiful environment we enjoy here in Wisconsin. The parks, the forests, the rivers are some of the best things about living here.
It's really true. And we like to think of WPR as another natural resource, something that's available to everyone and something that's fundamental to living in Wisconsin. With your pledge, you keep WPR a strong resource that everyone can enjoy. So please contribute now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Love these Wednesday programs when we talk about the environment and the outdoors. I tell you, a great way to support WPR is to become a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or on your credit card.
And many people give $10 or $20 a month, but you choose whatever amount is right for you. So please think about becoming a sustainer right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We don't charge you up front. You pay exactly what it's worth.
Oh, man, it's Pledge Drive again. I should change the station. They're not really talking to me. Someone else will pledge.
Don't change the station. Sarah, we are talking to you.
What?
Do you listen to WPR every day?
Yeah, every time I get into the car and every night when I cook dinner.
Do you rely on the news, information, entertainment that you get from WPR?
Of course I do. But you guys have people with more money who can make a big difference with their donation.
Actually, Sarah, you make a difference. Don't count yourself out. It's pledges from everyday listeners like you added together that make up the single biggest part of our budget.
Are you sure?
We are absolutely sure.
We're talking to you.
We really are talking to you. Don't make us come through the radio. Pledge now. Here's someone to tell you how.
You can go to WPR.org. I can't sound like Jim Fleming.
None of us can.
No, he's got that great deep voice. And he would, if he was standing here right now next to me, he'd say, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this spring membership drive. I'm Larry Mueller with Judith Sears-Poisson, asking for your support of WPR. And your gift, it might be $10 or $15 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
It really is. Help pay for the programs like this one you depend on. Like Larry said, our Wednesday environmental shows are always so informative, and we hear from so many people that it's really the highlight of their listening week. We're looking for 17 more pledges in the next 6 minutes or so. Please make your donation now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We live in a very generous society. We're quick to help a neighbor in need, and we chip in for great causes.
Continue that tradition of a generous society when you support WPR right now. If you've never given to WPR before, become our next new member. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You know, many new members give $5 a month, but the amount is totally up to you.
Think about your contribution to WPR as an investment in your future listening. You just give us a few minutes of your time and your donation in any amount, and in return, you will get lots of great programs.
Pamela from Tomahawk says, if I don't listen to WPR every day, I feel as if I'm missing something important. There are so many shows that I love, I have to download podcasts to catch up on the missed shows. I can't imagine life without WPR. Well, thank you so much, Pamela. If you agree with Pamela, please donate now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And in just a few minutes, you'll have made a wise investment, one that pays dividends each and every day.
And again, as we keep saying, you choose the amount to give. Any contribution, any amount makes a big difference. There are, you know, $10 a month, $20 a month, $5 a month. We have people who are giving $100 a month to Wisconsin Public Radio. It's your opportunity to support us right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Again, that's WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Don't forget, you can ask for our 2014 artist mug with your pledge. It was designed by a Wisconsin artist, and the mug is made in the USA. It's a lovely design, colorful, lively, just like Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can get that at the $150 level or more. Again, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And we have a couple more minutes to go, and we still have 17 calls to receive to reach our goal. So 17 more pledges to go in the next couple of minutes. I hope you will call in right now with your contribution at 888-202-2552. Or if you're at your computer, go to WPR.org and make your contribution. Again, any amount.
And Freedom from Madison says, "We love WPR. Can't say it any more shortly or sweetly than that. If you agree, please show your support now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And thank you.